On BreadboxMedia.com, this is Chuck Coughlin and setting the record straight about the glorious history of our beloved Catholic Church. We have a very special subject today. Father Junipero Serra was a great Franciscan missionary who created 5 missions in Mexico and 7 in California. He died in 1784 and he's buried under the sanctuary floor of the St. Charles Borromeo Mission in Carmel, California, in Monterey, which was his favorite mission. That's easy to understand why if you've ever been there. It's a beautiful place. About a month ago, a statue of Father Serra was vandalized. That inspired me to get out this material I had on Serra and did a show over a year ago on this. And so I'm using some of that, but there's some new material here too. This was the second time a statue of Father St. Junipero Serra had been defaced in California. He was the founder of the California Mission and sometimes criticized for his treatment of native populations in the 18th century. But when Pope Francis made him a saint, he said about Serra, he sought to defend the dignity of the native community, to protect it from those who had mistreated and abused it. And of course, a thorough several-year-long investigation went into these allegations and the whole nature of Father Serra's life. The fact that he was made a saint indicates the result of that investigation. The statue is at the old Santa Barbara Mission in California. It was decapitated and splashed with red paint. It happened August 17th, 2017, about a month ago. St. Serra is well remembered in Catholic circles as a missionary who brought the faith to the West Coast of the Americas. He founded 9 missions himself, from San Francisco to San Diego, and he inspired the creation of 12 others after his death in 1784. He's often called the Apostle of California, and of course he's one of the founders of California. He probably baptized about 6,000 native people. He was beatified by Pope John Paul in 1988 and canonized by Pope Francis in 2015. Pope Francis made Serra saint after a long investigation, in which he very justifiably said that St. Serra had sought to defend the dignity of the native community, to protect it from those who had mistreated and abused it. But that does not silence Father Serra's many critics. Back in 2015, shortly before Serra was canonized, the Carmel Mission was attacked, leaving several statues toppled to the ground and a headstone vandalized with the painted words, Saint of Genocide. In 2016, the front door of the Santa Cruz Mission was splashed with red paint. This year, a statue at St. Fernando Mission was painted red, and the word murder was written on it in white. The Santa Barbara Mission was founded in 1786 and is the only California mission to have remained under the care of the Franciscans. It is currently a parish in the Archdiocese of Los Angeles. The mission's home to papers of the entire California Mission System, one of the oldest libraries in the state of California. The vandalized statue of Serra has been removed from its location on the mission grounds, but Monica Orozco, the mission's executive secretary, told the media that she did not know if the statue would be repaired or replaced. When he was canonized, it was by Pope Francis in the National Cathedral in Washington, D.C.
This was somewhat controversial. NPR put it this way, Junipero's canonization raises eyebrows, a saint with a mixed history. Of course, the name Junipero Serra is well known in California. Schools and streets are named in his honor. Statues of the 18th century Spanish missionaries still stand. But Native American activists are far less enamored with the friar, saying Serra was actually an accomplice in the brutal colonization of natives. Addressing the controversy, Francis Rocha, Rome Bureau Chief of the Catholic News, said that Pope Francis has made a point of canonizing famous evangelizers, and he picked someone who was a Spanish speaker. That might be his own background as a South American, but he's also reaching out to the growing part of the church in the United States, which is Hispanic. Father Junipero Serra, his name is Juniper, first name is Junipero Juniper. I wonder if Father Junipero Serra is the inspiration for Brother Juniper, which was a popular comic strip about a cute little monk. About 20 years ago, it sort of disappeared. Junipero does translate as juniper, brother juniper. Some of the complaints of the activist groups of Native Americans blame the Spanish and Father Serra for bringing diseases, European diseases, that wiped out large segments of the population of California Indians. California was the most populous area of what is now the United States at the time the Europeans arrived in the New World. The history of occupied California dates back to the summer of 1769, but the history of the missions actually can be traced all the way back to 1493, just after the discovery of America. There's an interval of almost 300 years between those two dates, during which the mission system in the New World grew to be a philosophy of human rights, put forward and defended by the religious orders, and bitterly opposed by the secular elements among the colonists. Now, this conflict creates a complex history. Certainly, the native people were abused at times by the Spaniards. But I think in setting the record straight, you will see that one of the great defenders of these Indians was Father Junipero Serra. The philosophy that all men are brothers, and these newly discovered areas belong first to the king and then to the original inhabitants, this was the theory of the missionaries, of the religious. This clashed with the theory that too many of the secular settlers subscribed to, that the natives were subhuman beings with no right of private ownership. Yet the King of Spain found profitable use for both of these conflicting forces and utilized the first one and then the other for the general advancement of the Spanish Empire. When the Franciscan Padre Junipero Serra established the first California mission, the religious program appeared to triumph. Events in Europe and Mexico, already underway, were destined, however, to rob the church of its victory. The mission system, just beginning to take root in Alta California, was even then facing extinction. In another 70 years, it would pass out of existence. But let's go back in time. King Philip of Spain had issued orders for the reduction, as it was called, of the California wilderness by a military expedition. He was unsuccessful. The barren wastelands of the Pacific shores resisted the efforts of its commanders to find a means of settlement. A century was to pass, and several costly failures were to be experienced by the Spanish crown before the great peninsula along the Baja below present-day San Diego was conquered. By then, the Spanish throne had become very cautious, and when conquest came, it was achieved not by the crown, but by a group of hardy Jesuits at their own expense and on their own terms. The Jesuits secured the right of complete control over the military commanders who accompanied them. The soldiers and their officers, devoid of spiritual ambition or world statesmanship, resented being dominated by these religious men. As a rule, they came from the ranks of the colonials, who despised the Indians. They were disappointed by the absence of wealth and the barrenness of the country. The extreme poverty of the Indians in that area denied them even the simplest spoils of conquest. Lower California only furnished the colonials with further grievances against the mission system. The missions, however, proved themselves to the virtue of the system. Under the leadership of the Jesuits, there was a modest suggestion of prosperity that emerged from the land's meager resources. After the Jesuits had been removed from this area, they were followed by the Franciscans under Father Serra. The Spanish crown had tried to find a group of islands that would offer a strategic defense for the Philippines, but these islands could never be discovered. Eventually, the Spanish government became more anxious than ever for the security of the California coasts. Knowledge of England's victory in Canada in 1763 was woven with rumors of Russia's approach from Alaska. Again, the crown looked to the missions. After the Jesuits had been expelled, the care of the missions and the conversion to the Indians in the Spanish settlements were entrusted to the Franciscans. To the Franciscans, therefore, belongs the honor of founding the great mission system of California proper. The leader of this gigantic work was the renowned Father Junipero Serra, and his first settlement in California was the Mission of San Diego, which he established in July of 1769. 7 years later, he founded San Francisco. For 15 years, the saintly man labored in California with all the apostolic zeal of a man who deserves to be a saint. At the time of his death, 1784, he had established 9 missions between San Diego and San Francisco. The total number of missions founded in California by the Franciscans was 21, and they extended from Sonoma in the north to San Diego in the south. This is in addition to the five missions that Father Serra founded in Mexico. Some of the more famous missions in California are Santa Clara, San Luis Obispo, Santa Barbara, and San Juan Capistrano. Each mission had its church, a residence for the fathers, a presidio, or military guard, and shops and workrooms for the Indians, who besides receiving instructions in the Catholic faith, were taught the useful arts of civilization. Each mission was established in conjunction with a Spanish settlement under a civil government, and the immigration of the secular people was almost exclusively Spanish and Mexican. Finally, in 1822, California became part of the territory of Mexico. From that date begins the decline of the missions. Unfortunately, the policy of the Mexican government toward the missions became one of annoyance, interference, and aggression. Finally, by 1836, the Mexican government decided to secularize the missions, which was, in fact, their downright confiscation. The fathers were deprived of their lands and buildings, and Indians freed from the benevolent government of the friars. The results were disastrous. The Indians were scattered and dispersed. Many of them lapsed into barbarism. The missions themselves were destroyed. This confiscation forms one of the saddest injustices of history.
It certainly does recall Henry VIII's dissolution of the monasteries, actually demolition of the monasteries, in England in the 1500s. In confiscating the missions and causing their decline, the Mexican government had done a great wrong to the Native American people of California.
The temporal wrongs done at the time were partly righted in 1902 by the award of the International Tribunal
of Arbitration at The Hague
in the case of the Pious Fund.
The International Tribunal found that the Franciscans' missions had been unjustly taken, in effect had been stolen from them, by the Mexican government. The tribunal decided to award damages,
which adjudged the payment by Mexico to the United States
for the benefit of the Catholic Church in California
of the accrued interest of the fund.
When taken over by the Mexican president, Santa Anna, in 1872, the total value of the Pious Fund, so-called the Pious Fund, was estimated
at $1,700,000. After around 1826, there began a gradual influx of Americans emigrating into California, which was still a territory. Most of these people were engaged in trading, hunting, prospecting, cattle raising, and farming.
The trickle of migration of Americans into California became a flood with the discovery of gold. In 1848, it was called the Gold Rush. A few words about the missions in general are essential to an understanding of this historic episode. They were founded in the spirit of faith and charity. They were carried on with zeal and great success. However, they represented a fixed solution in a changing world. The Franciscans were in charge. They were completely in charge. Being ruled by a monarch with absolute authority was considered an exception in the 18th century. It was inconceivable in the 19th. I must mention that America was to tolerate slavery for another half century after that, but only as an economic necessity. Benevolence was a side issue there. The mission's entire goal was benevolence to the Native Americans. The missions did run less smoothly in their later years. That may be conceded. How could they fail to do so when their existence was perpetually threatened? From the time that the Mexican Republic was established, it never ceased its efforts at secularization. Two things only stood in its way: the amazing but nonetheless undeniable reluctance of the Indians to be emancipated, so-called, and the oft-repeated fact that 7/8 of the country's produce was raised in the mission. We're discussing Father Serra, Father Junipero Serra, the great founder of the missions in California, who's considered one of the founders of California. As a matter of fact, there's a statue of Father Serra in the Statuary Hall in the U.S. Capitol that honors him as one of the founders of California, an important historical figure in the formation of this country and the New World. What I'd like to make a small attempt to set the record straight about is that Father Serra is a controversial figure. There's actually been a suggestion that his statue be removed from the Statuary Hall. that he did not treat the Native Americans well. They were under his care. Of course, people are making an error to judge an 18th century missionary by 21st century standards. It was a different culture, a different time. This impression is quite mistaken. Father Serra was a great defender of the Native Americans. The Spanish colonial secular authorities did, in many cases, do what we might call today abuse the Native Americans. Father Serra went to extraordinary means to defend them always. There were secular Spanish settlers who often did not treat the Native Americans well, and the militia that was always sent by the Spanish crown to accompany their missions. Usually you had two missionaries, Franciscans later, or Jesuits earlier. The Spanish crown always insisted the missionaries be accompanied by militia, but this meant usually around four soldiers. Two Franciscan missionaries, the order required that they not work alone, and four or more soldiers. This is hardly a very big crushing colonial enterprise, since, of course, California was the most populated part of the United States, what is now the United States, at that time. This is not in the nature of a military conquest or battles. This is more of evangelization and civilization. The Indians of California were in an extremely primitive state of culture. The men went around without any clothes at all times. Compared to the rest of North American Indians, they were not culturally advanced. They can accurately be said to have performed a great cultural leap forward under the instruction of the Franciscan missionaries and the Jesuits before them. Probably the greatest such leap in North America. This was the result of the missionary schools and the instruction they received from the missionaries in arts and crafts, and especially in herding cattle and planting crops. And let's not forget that greatest of cultural gifts, literacy, that Christian missionaries take with them everywhere they go. They create a literate culture. And once the people can read, the sky's the limit for them, for what they can do independently. You've just taken the chains of illiteracy from their backs. For this alone, we should be grateful to the California missions and to the founder of 21 missions, Blessed Father Junipero Serra. One area of criticism that's been leveled against the missions, the Spanish missions, is that they decimated the population with diseases. Yes, they did bring diseases, but they're entirely unaware in the 1700s of germ theory, and the effect of that was an accident. The Spanish, like all other people, were unaware until very recent times that they were bringing diseases with them that might harm people. Indeed, our open border policies are dangerous. It's always a concern. What happened back then, it was tragic, but it was an accident. There was no intent or knowledge that that was what would happen. And I want to point out that wherever in the world new immigrant people come in, they bring diseases that often decimate the populations. All peoples are guilty of this. If the Spanish are guilty of it, the British are guilty of it, and the Native Americans themselves are guilty of it, because they came in successive waves. There were 4,000 years ago, there was a Dien culture in Ohio, mound builders. They suddenly disappeared, apparently from an introduced disease. There doesn't seem to be another cause that can be discovered. Perhaps there is, though. Sometimes terrible diseases would come in with new waves of population. This has been happening to the human race since there was a human race. This is not to excuse the fact that the California natives were indeed greatly reduced by the European diseases. But we have to acknowledge the result was unintentional. Father Serra devoted his whole life. He had been a brilliant academic before. He gave it all up to devote his whole life to these Indians. He gave up everything to care for them. We have to look at the man's true motivation and understand the difference between an intentional act and an accident. And of course, each successive wave of human beings that arrived in North America and South America brought good and bad with them. Some came to exterminate. Spain came to bring the benefits of civilization, literacy, modern medical care for the time, and Christianity, and the way. the way, the truth, and the light. The Native Americans did not cross the Bering Strait in one day. They came thousands of years apart, and each successive wave decimated the population with diseases. Wherever you have immigration, it has always been that way. There's always the chance introduction of diseases. Who is to say there isn't also the chance of great benefits? In responding to the criticisms that Franciscans erased a local culture and supplanted it with a European Christian culture or Christendom, I can't do better than to present to you an audio tape of a firing line program. That was a TV program that had a long run, probably the longest run of any TV program, on PBS with William F. Buckley as its host. He addressed this question 20 years ago of Father Serra. When Father Serra was made Blessed Father Serra, they had a debate on his show about whether that was the right thing to do. Should we want Father Serra to be canonized as a saint? The Catholic gentleman, William F. Buckley, hosted this program and had people on to debate two sides of various issues, or sometimes more than two sides. Since Pope John Paul II had declared Father Serra blessed, some Indian groups had objected, saying Father Serra had participated in a mission system that was not of benefit to the Indians, as a matter of fact, harmed them. So in order to debate this, Mr. Buckley invited Edward Castillo to represent the viewpoint of these groups. And on the other side, Father Noel Maholi, a Franciscan, whose order had assigned him the duty of defending the record of Father Serra, of supporting the cause of canonization of Father Junipero Serra. The exchange was rather interesting. Mr. Buckley was always rather humorous. I want to play you a piece of the audio of that TV show from PBS of 1989. The first voice you will hear is the voice of William F. Buckley, the host, asking Father Noel how he felt about his assignment that supports the canonization. Then, after that, Mr. Buckley addresses Edward Castillo, who opposes the canonization. Here it is.
You began by telling us that you, in effect, were following orders, but you were told to become an advocate, much as a lawyer might follow orders if he was instructed. But I asked whether, in general sense, I meant, are you completely yourself sold on the correctness of your cause?
If at any time I became convinced that Father Junipero Serra was not a saint, in his own day and in his death, I would have asked to be relieved of the job, because there are too many valuable things to be done and important things to be done, and I wouldn't want to waste my time. That would be the argument. I wouldn't want to waste my time on something that is nugatory or would end in defeat.
Well, Professor Castillo, should I say Castillo Castillo? Sorry. Just to get a little perspective here, are you protesting the canonization of Junipero Serra in your capacity as a Christian, or merely in your capacity as a Californian, or both?
Well, I'm concerned about the canonization of Serra principally because of the allegations that have been made concerning the benefits of the Christian mission system on the California Indians. I'm a direct descendant of mission Indians from California, and we know from our family histories, from the oral traditions that have passed down through our families, and the fact that I studied California history, I'm convinced that the system that he established here was not of benefit to the Indians. While I don't propose to tell the church what to do, and by the way, I'm not a Christian, I'm a pagan, and what I don't propose to tell that church what to do, but I am concerned about the portrayal of the benefits of the mission system for the Indians.
Well, I think we can have an independent curiosity about your objections that you're being a Christian, but as the lawyers would put it, you really have no standing, do you? That is to say, it's none of your business who the church canonizes. I'm not being an Englishman. I might be intellectually curious about any war over the legitimacy of the successor to the Queen, but I wouldn't feel that I had a personal interest in it. So why don't you let Catholics and Protestants and Jews and non-pagans do their own thing in their own way?
I suppose that would be fine as long as they did it without alleging that benefits accrued to the Indians of California. That was not the case. The legacy of Sarah.
But anybody can allege the truth under the First Amendment, as long as it doesn't bind other citizens to compliance in that history. You can go ahead and be anti-Sarah for the rest of your life and follow the Holy's not going to disturb you, nor
that's
the
true.
Pope.
That's true.
Or might he send some submarines up here
to
shoot at you?
But when he writes books making allegations that the plantation mission type system that was established in California benefited Indians, and I know otherwise, then I feel it's my right to speak
out. Okay, but this has nothing to do with canonization. In other words, if they elected, if the Catholic Church nominated him for saint or for Pope Mark A, it would have no bearing whatsoever on the historical question, as far as you're concerned. So why should you attempt to obstruct a process that falls outside of your correct jurisdiction?
Well, I think it's every citizen's right to have an opinion on something. And
gee, I really don't. I don't see why I should tell... I don't see why I should lecture the Jews that say, on who should be the chief rabbi. I might prefer him to him, but I don't think it ought to become a cause militant of mine. I don't mean to kill this program, having made that point, that I really don't think it's any of your business, let's discuss whether or not, assuming that there were no canonization in prospect, we're glad or sorry that Junipero said I lived. You're sorry, right?
I'm sorry that he came to California.
Yeah, and you're sorry that he came to California because he did what to the Indians?
He established a system of missions along the coast that was primarily relied upon the military, Spanish military, and I think this is a part of the history that's unfortunately been left out, relied heavily on the Spanish military to establish its authority in California, extend its church.
Well, why does that surprise you?
It doesn't surprise me.
If it doesn't surprise you, why did you bring it up?
Well, I bring it up because I'm concerned that the canonization process has made allegations that this process benefited Indians, and I know otherwise.
Well, are we going to argue that any culture which was interfered with by another culture was diminished by that experience? Are we going to argue that the blacks in the South were hurt in virtue of being taken from Africa to South Carolina?
If you were a black, you may.
If I'm a black, I may. It seems to me that your the notion that no culture should ever be disturbed is a kind of a discomforting thought and entirely inconsistent with what I understand to be the superintending instruction of Christ, which was to go out and teach the people in the ways of the Lord. Now, if you feel that Christ was a bad influence, then anybody who was Christianized was hurt. But this would be inconsistent with not only your position, but the historical position, is that right?
That's correct. What prompted the missionaries was Christ's mandate to go forth and make disciples of all nations. Mm-hmm. Now, the question before the House is not canonizing the mission system. The question is, this individual, what kind of a life did he lead? And to stick with the mission system for a moment, had not the Spanish come into California, what prompted them to move after 2 years of holding title to that land was the Russian threat from on top. And if the Russians hadn't come down with whatever civilization they would have brought, surely the British would have come in. And then we might have a repetition of what happened in Massachusetts when the year that Father Juniper Serra was born, they were getting $20 a scalp in Massachusetts for Indian scalps.
Well, but what if the Russians hadn't, fairness now, gotten in our way? Wouldn't there still have been a justification for a military support of missionary activity?
Oh, sure. But the military support was incidental. The handful of soldiers. California was the most populous area of the contiguous United States at that time. A population estimated anywhere from 250,000 to 1,000,000 Indians. Had they risen up, they could have pushed that handful of Spanish soldiers into the ocean. and a handful of missionaries.
Well, and the Mexicans could have done that to Cortes, also, right? Mm-hmm. But what I want to understand is, are we being invited to object categorically in the fashion of Margaret Mead to any culture moving in and implanting its own culture over that which was there before?
No, I've never made that contention, and I'm quite aware of the history of the other areas of impact, cultural impact, the French, the English, and others. What concerns many thoughtful people is the fact that this particular colonization was clothed and shrouded in religious motivations and others, which today, I mean, would be shocking to people if we want to argue that.
Well, we don't want to use today's perspective, do we? The perspective during several centuries, which perspective brought very bloody wars, religious wars, was that it was the corporate duty of the state to go out and colonize. And to colonize meant also to, in those days, Christianize. The Puritans understood this to be a mandate to take whatever Indians they could find and teach them a different way of life and teach them to worship a different God. Are you saying that this was all a grievous historical miscalculation?
No, I just think it's sad that we are dealing with it in the 20th century now because of the canonization process. Again, history is brought up, and if we're going to accept Sarah as an example to 20th century and future generations of Christians, then I think that the whole story should come out.
Well, I've read your material, you point to a lot of atrocities committed by a lot of missionaries, which I don't doubt, because everybody commits atrocities, and I join you in deploring them. But I didn't see you point to Junipero Serra as an alleged perpetrator of any atrocities. Or are you not now contending this, or are you simply saying that because he didn't protest the ambient way of doing things, he was, in effect, guilty of participation?
Well, I think he was a man of his time, certainly not a man ahead of his times. He was a reactionary, even by the standards of the 18th century.
How do you define a reactionary?
Well, reactionary in the sense that the Enlightenment had begun to affect European thought, especially among the educated classes, and ideas of the dignity of the human being, freedom of religion, the idea that a state-sponsored church may not be in the best interest of people, were all things that he was opposed to. He was a commissioner of the Inquisition.
Well, he died 50 years before the British allowed Catholics to vote. So I don't see why that would make him a reactionary.
So there you have a clip of that. Very interesting that this Edward Castillo has just said that Father Serra was a man who was a reactionary against the age of the Enlightenment. And he typified the age of Enlightenment as being characterized by freedom of religion and attention to the dignity of man. It was interesting that freedom of religion was far from being an innovation of the Enlightenment. If anything, we went somewhat backwards then. There were various civilizations prior to the French Enlightenment or the British Enlightenment that had the characteristics of freedom of religion. And we could point to the reign of Constantine in the 4th century, with the Edict of Toleration, of religious toleration, promulgated by the Emperor Constantine. Precisely, Constantine's allowing Christianity, and specifically Catholicism, to enlighten the view of human beings as persons, as individual persons, each possessing a divine soul, each being recognized by God as equal to other human beings, each being a person. In the early centuries after Christ, this was precisely what launched the great lift and status of women, achieve equality with man, which led to the abolition of slavery, which led to the banning of slavery in South America and Latin America by Queen Isabella, with the encouragement and advocacy of Bishop Bartolomeo de las Casas. But I'm debating with somebody who recorded his positions over 20 years ago. So let's spend our time a little more productively. But I must add that many of the great figures of the Enlightenment denied the existence of the soul. removed the best argument for the dignity of man by denying the soul and emphasizing rationality. But I don't want to oversimplify a very complex issue. Perhaps the best answer is a simple one. Father Junipero Serra was a dedicated religious missionary. He sacrificed a brilliant career in the academic world, who gave his whole life to make the lives of the California Native Americans better and to open the way for them to make their life in the next world better, introducing them to the way and to the truth and to the light with the grand commission of Christ himself. Another kind of answer is to offer a bit of California mission music. The men of the Legacy Vocal Ensemble, St. Padre Nuestro, Our Father.
Rather beautifully done. Padre Nuestro, Our Father, sung by the Men's Legacy Choir of the California Mission, sung by men of mixed heritage, having Native American ancestors and Spanish ancestors. Notice that this beautiful piece of music is a product of the Catholic area of Western Europe. It's sung in parts, four parts. Nowhere else on earth did harmony develop. It was developed in Christian Europe. Nowhere else on earth was there music like that. Elsewhere in the world, music did develop, but on a far simpler basis, on a far more primitive basis. It had only melody and rhythm and perhaps a low continuing tone. The whole idea of developing harmony took quite a while and was perfected over time, over centuries, in Christendom. Harmony is a magnificent thing. Singing and harmony, such as the beautiful singing we just heard, is one of the great cultural gifts of Christendom to the rest of the world. Among the many other gifts of the Christian missionaries, of the Catholic missionaries, like these brave Franciscan, converting thousands of people, tens of thousands of people, and teaching them to read, giving them literacy. What a gift that was, literacy. Which made possible for their subsequent generations to become surgeons and college professors or truck drivers, whatever they wanted. The missionaries' infusion of Christian culture, of Western European culture, made it possible for these Indians and their descendants to meld into the cultural progress that was being made to the east of them and the rest of the United States. And eventually, California surpassed most of those states to the east of them in cultural levels. And Father Junipero Serra is one of the founders of California. Maybe almost the principal founder. One of the reasons I'm addressing again after several years, Father Serra, is just the other day, I found a news article and an upsetting photograph of one of the statues of Father Junipero Serra out in California. Actually, there were two photographs. One showing the statue of Father Serra before it was vandalized by an image smasher, an iconoclast. The second photograph shows that several days ago, the statue had been beheaded and the rest of it splashed with red paint, symbolizing blood, no doubt. Christianity did a great deal of good, improving relationship among people, between people, and the treatment of women, the elimination of slavery, and many other things. As happens in various times in history, we seem to be in a period where there's an outbreak of image smashing, of iconoclasm. Whatever you think about it, offended people getting rid of statues of famous people they regard as offensive. Whatever you think about it, I don't think it was deserved in this case. Let's reflect a little bit more on this great man that I stand to defend today.
Blessed Father Junipero Serra, a very great man, a saint who has been unjustly criticized. We were discussing a terrible tragedy, that the successful period of the missions was soon to be over because the Mexican government, who was antagonistic to the missions, had taken them over and they had decided to secularize them. It amounted to the dissolution of the missions and the impoverishment of many people. The many people included the Native Americans who had found an economic foundation within the missions. Their dissolution would mean the collapse of industry and trade. The friars recognized well the insecurity of their position under the Mexican government. They wanted to avoid any problem. Some historians observe they were the readiest taxpayers in history. They had long been generous providers. In one nine-year period, the mission furnished the presidios, the Spanish military governments, with large amount of food and supplies. When payments were demanded later, they met it with equanimity. They supported the troops kept originally for their defense. They paid a per capita tax on every Indian they harbored. By 1820, the outstanding drafts amounted to $400,000. All this should have made them reasonably saved. But we all know the story of the goose that laid the golden egg, don't we? The 19th century brought many travelers to California, and we have the testimony of all of them concerning the practical utility of the missions and of the spirit of kindness that prevailed. There was a man named Alexander Forbes who was most reluctant to give any praise at all to missions of any kind. He published a book in 1835 called The History of Upper and Lower California. He disapproved on principle of priestcraft. He disliked American Protestant missionaries, about whom he seems to know very little, but was much more intense in his dislike of the Franciscans, about whom he came to know a great deal. He disapproved of their system. Of its results, he witnessed with a sort of a stupefied admiration. Men, and especially priests, who have undue authority, ought to grow tyrannical. These priests did not. Men who are held in subjection ought to grow dissatisfied. These Indians did not. Theoretically, everything was wrong. Practically, everything came out right. Forbes was puzzled. He could not account for this irregularity, and he was not to bend his thoughts for a minute into thinking that singing hymns before an image of the Virgin Mary is true religion or anything like it. Nevertheless, he did honestly bear witness to what his eyes saw. Let's quote him. "Considering the absolute and irresponsible authority possessed by the missionaries, their conduct has been marked by a degree of humanity, moderation, and benevolence unexampled in any other situation. There are few instances to be found where men enjoying such unlimited confidence and power have not abused them. Yet the missionaries of California neither betray their trust nor show themselves unworthy of confidence. On the contrary, there are many proofs of their zeal, industry, and philanthropy. Since the country has been opened up, strangers have found in their missions disinterested hospitality and kindness." So wrote Alexander Forbes, no friend of the missionaries. About the Indians, simple creature whom the friars have snatched from the enjoyment of freedom and turned into, quote, "superstitious, pusillanimous slaves," unquote, they strangely showed nothing but gratitude for the wrong that had been done them. I quote Forbes, "Their mode of life accords too well with the native indolence of their character and with their total lack of independent spirit. Their labor is light, and they have leisure to waste in their beloved inaction or in the pastimes of their aboriginal state. They venerate their masters with an affectionate fervor approaching to adoration. When, as did recently happen, priests have been removed for political reason, the distress of the Indians at parting with them has been extreme. They have entreated with tears and lamentations to be allowed to follow them in their exile. There never was a more perfect resemblance between a pastor and his disciple and a shepherd and his flock." End of quote. While other travelers, a trifle less serious and good deal less polemical than Forbes, have emphasized the mission's wise management and enviable prosperity. In 1829, a man named Alfred Robinson, an American who had come to California, witnessed the first secularization of the missions and was disgusted. He called it a policy of plundering to permit plunder. Robinson had eaten the fruit of the orchards of San Buenaventura. The monastery at San Luis Rey had shown him great hospitality and put him up in very pleasant quarters. There was a sudden increase of prices of the produce and all things. It annoyed him that he was being charged $40 for the rent of horses, which the liberal missionaries had let him rent for $6. Americans were not the only visitors. A man named Van Langstroth, who was quite a scholar and diplomat, who spoke no Spanish, had to converse with the friars in Latin. But he had praise for everything, except the wine. He considered that to be thin. Well, we have to assume the California wine has improved a great deal since then. But he warmly complimented the thrift and intelligence that he saw everywhere. He saw great herds of cattle and found that the hides were an important source of revenue. And he loved the open-handed welcome accorded to strangers. He thought the women more intelligent than the men, who danced better than they plowed. But all alike he found to be happy, pleased, content, and peaceful. There was a Frenchman, Dufle de Mora, who saw the missions when they had but a few more years of life. Here's what he said. When the hides, tallow, grain, and oil are sold to traders, the friars distribute cloth, tobacco, handkerchief, cutlery, and trinkets among the Indians. The surplus they devote to replenishing the farms and the embellishment of churches. Like good husbandmen, they are careful to keep a part of the harvest in the granaries to provide for a bad season. It was always the same story. Whatever visitor recorded his observations of the missions had much positive to say. An incidental comment from a young man named Richard Dana told the same story. He sailed along the entire Pacific coast, and he added this word. He was well fed at the missions. He was badly fed everywhere else. He also declared that San Juan Capistrano was the loneliest and loveliest sight he'd ever seen. It remains a very beautiful place today. But that didn't help. Darkness was closing down over the California missions, and ruin and death awaited the Native Americans who depended on them. Who could say that this was all in vain? It existed gloriously for a while. Man has only the present in which to live. Junipero Serra, pioneer, missionary, witnessed the rich reward of his labor and left the development to faith. There's a whole literature about Father Serra. So much has been written and said about him, you can actually get a pretty distinct picture of him. Joyfully abandoning the old world for the new, leaving behind his considerable academic success, Serra, defying his lameness, he had suffered a terrible bite on his leg. It produced a wound similar to that produced by a brown recluse rider. It festered, it did not heal, it dissolved tissue. On this leg, he walked hundreds of miles, reaching San Diego in triumph. Serra, whose sermons were delivered in an extravagant oratorical style, full of passion, performing amazing physical feats, punishing himself during his sermons, inspiring and amazing everyone. Serra praying all night by the sea and keeping his Spanish military companions from turning home and to go on exploring. As he prayed, he exhibited such passions, such reverence, that it caused the group to go on exploring. We have more pictures of Serra. Serra pleading before the Mexican government, the junta, for justice to his missions. Serra planting the cross 9 times in the wilderness. Serra profoundly spiritual and undeviatingly practical. Serra humblest and stubbornest of men. Serra consumed by desire to save souls for heaven, but always mindful of man's bodily needs. Serra living under the shadow of the cross and holding in his heart the maxim of St. Teresa. All things are passing. God alone lasts. I hope I've done a small bit to set the record straight about the saintly Junipero Serra. Let's take another moment and listen to the legacy choir of the California missions as they sing the final moments of the Our Father, Padre Nuestro.